Yes, I will have you just talk to the bill as if the amendment has been put on. Then when we get a quorum, we'll move it and put the amendment on.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet. Please proceed.
Well, what I did in the wake of the Sandy Hook thing and with some advice and consultation with our school superintendents in our district, we came up with the idea of amending some of the language and statute with regard to the safe school levy. And in particular, when I went to the reviser and had this drafted, regrettably, it came out under health and safety levy. And I went around and gathered some of your signatures, including Chair Marquardt's and Mr. Dabney and Mr. Newton, representing that it would be the $30 limit, subject to the $30 limit under the Safe Schools levy. So the delete all amendment basically corrects that problem. I apologize for that. And essentially what it does, the bill just includes language which will allow, at the discretion of our school boards and school districts, giving local control, to use some of these funds for costs of demolition, repair, and replacement, installation of new equipment for security purposes, could include security cameras, security locking doors, emergency communication devices. And even one of the things that was pointed out to me is oftentimes our schools are full of steel and girder bar joists and things like that that sometimes interferes with communications should first responders come there. So even the simple things like putting repeaters in the school so that, you know, command center on the outside of the school could communicate with people on the inside. So that's essentially what the bill is about. And I have school superintendent Paul Durand as a testifier, if he would like to offer some comments.
Very good. And before we get to Superintendent Durand, we do have a quorum. So, Representative Hertaus, would you like to move House File 825 to be laid over and for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill?
Yes, and I'll ask you to put it on the general register as well, but I already know the answer.
We do. I think what I heard from Representative Hertaus was to lay this over for possible inclusion. Also, Representative Hertaus, would you like to move your DE1 amendment?
Yes, I would. I would move my DE1 amendment.
All right. Any discussion on the DE1 amendment? If not, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Very good. Welcome, Superintendent Durand, if you would please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I had so much fun the last time I was here, I couldn't resist to come back. I've been to a number of meetings with Representative Hertaus. He's never brought chocolate, just so you know. So this is a new thing. You're teaching an old dog new tricks, and he's learning very well. I look forward to my next meeting with him. We all know that safety and security of our students.
Please state your name. For the
Paul Durand, Superintendent, you. Rockford Area Schools, District 883. We all know that safety and security of our students and our staff have been brought to the attention of all of us in some very tragic ways over this last spring. One of the things that in conversation with Representative Hertaus is trying to make sure that we're very clear on, and that is school districts across the state have differing needs, whether it's in International Falls, in Rockford, in Rochester. I definitely want to make sure that it's very, very loudly heard that the ability for districts to have local control to make decisions to pick solutions for safeguarding our students are very, very critical. What happens in Minneapolis may be important for a decision that's made locally in Minneapolis that might be a bit different in a different part of the state. Having said that, I think that the language that's been offered, it helps to clarify what we can use these resources on and these revenues to be able to help safeguard our students and our staff. There is not a one-size-fits-all answer. Honestly, if there was, my sense would be is that everybody would just automatically do that and have the answer. We're all trying to figure out what the best solution is for a problem that potentially we're trying to figure out, and it's like changing a tire as you're driving down the road. You really don't know what the answer is or the solution is. But I will say that the ability for us to use the Safe Schools levy in this manner would be in the best interest of the school districts, and I think this clarification would be very helpful.
Thank you very much. We have a question. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I
think my question might be for Mr. Strom. The original introduction amends 123B.57 subdivision 6. The delete all amends 126C.44 under safe schools levy. So can you tell me why this is better to be amending this particular statute, which is quite a distance from 123B.57?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, the author may want to address this. I believe he did in his introductions a bit, but as he explained, his intent was originally to amend this section, not the health and safety, but the safe school.
Oh, I missed that.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes sense now. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Representative Sells.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question is for Superintendent Duran. First of all, I want to say I think that local control for school districts to make decisions is a very good thing, as a former school board member myself. I am wondering, what are the are there current streams of revenue that are available for violence prevention and facility security activities? I'm just wondering about that. And then this does not increase the levy, the safe school levy, so I'm just wondering if there might be any other areas that are currently covered that could possibly be compromised.
Mr. Duran.
Well, there's $30 per pupil unit that comes through the safe schools levy. For our district, that's about $55,000 annually, and we're a fairly small district. I guess what I would like to just make sure that you all hear is that the funding formulas are so odd the way they are right now. An unfunded mandate in the area of security would be just another hit to the general fund. And so my point is very, very clear that if there's going to be at some point some mandate that's thrown on for safety or for security for schools because of a reaction to what has happened out in the world, we all understand that we need to make sure that our students are safe. But please don't add another expectation on top of us without having that funding formula that comes with it. And is this enough? I don't know if there's ever enough to make sure that we can properly answer that question. But I will say that I looked in the governor's proposal, and I think he raises the safe school levy by a couple of dollars. So that would mean some increased revenues for us if that were to be successful in the end result. But right now, I wasn't looking towards an increase in this, but just want to make sure that it's clarified that no additional mandates without resources to be able to help us with that, because that really ends up being a reduction in the general fund than if you put an unfunded mandate, and especially in this area.
Oh, Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Superintendent Duran. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from members? Is there anyone from the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 825? If not, Representative Hertaus, any closing comments?
No, thank you for this opportunity. I think it's just a common sense inclusion and change in the language and statute given some of the things that have happened. And I am in favor of local control, and I think this gives it to it without it being a directive as such.
Representative Hertaus, thank you for bringing this forward.
Yeah.
So this House File 825 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Representative Newton. Would anyone like to move the minutes for March 12th while we're in the interlude here?
So moved.
Representative Myra moves the March 12th, 2013 minutes. Any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion carried. The minutes are approved. Representative Newton, would you like to move your bill? And I see you also have an amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1111, but I do have an amendment, House H1111A1, which makes a minor adjustment.
Okay, so we've got a motion on 1111 to be laid over and for possible inclusion, and now you move the A
A1 amendment.
A1 amendment. All right, to get this into the form that you would like. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill essentially does away with everything that Representative Hertaus tried to do this morning. It rolls health and safety revenue into the deferred maintenance formula for non-alternative facilities districts. And then it rolls health and safety revenue into the alternative facilities for districts that qualify for alternative facilities. So what we're doing essentially is we're eliminating the health and safety programs and putting everything that was had been in that in the deferred maintenance programs. And we're increasing deferred maintenance allowance from $60 to $230 per pupil unit for those districts that don't qualify for alternative facilities revenue. This bill will dramatically reduce paperwork. We've been working on this for almost 3 years. And just to cite an example of when this first came to my attention, in Anoka-Hennepin District, if we wanted to change the doorknobs in one of our schools, we had to have a separate work order for each doorknob that would come to the Department of Education and had to be approved separately. And when you figure the number of doorknobs times 50 buildings that we have in the district, it would take a lot of paperwork. And at the time, there had been no one at the Department of Education to review these requests coming from all of the school districts across the state. So we're trying to eliminate paperwork, make things easier for districts at the same time, increase the amount of funding that the districts have. With me today, I have Mr. Earl Affman, who's the Director of Business Services for MASPO, and he would like to testify.
Very good. Welcome, Mr. Affman, and please state your name and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Earl Ottman. I'm the business manager for the Pierce School District. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, MASBO. I'm a past president of MASBO, and I was one of the members appointed to the Education Finance Working Group. The working group's challenge was to make school finance simpler, more equitable, adequate, flexible, allow for local control, and place funding where it is needed most, in order to better serve all students wherever they may be. This bill, with some minor changes, will accomplish all of these goals. One could say that this bill is the poster child for school finance reform. First of all, this bill will reduce the paperwork that we all have to do. It's no doubt that business managers across the state have to spend an enormous amount of time submitting data to the Department of Ed and then wait for their response and then back and forth until we finally get approval for a lot of it is just minor projects like changing doorknobs. The efficiency will be improved obviously at the state and local levels, and we'll be able to spend our time on more pressing issues. Funding for the deferred maintenance is not close to being adequate to meet current maintenance needs. The cost per student of deferred maintenance, whether it's for roof replacement, HVAC upgrades, parking lot repairs, is similar in all districts regardless of size. With the increase in funding and greater freedom to allocate these funds, school boards will be allowed to decide where best to invest these dollars to improve facilities for students and staff. Currently, we have a huge equity problem between 25 of the largest school districts and the remaining districts when it comes to facility maintenance funding. The 25 largest school districts have alternative facilities revenue, which raises an average of about $426 per pupil unit to fund their health and safety and facility maintenance projects. The remaining districts are able to raise only about, on average, $226 per pupil unit for the same needs. For my district, we're able to raise about $100,000 in combined health and safety and deferred maintenance revenue. With this additional revenue, we'll probably get close to another $188,000. This will go a long way for us in keeping our buildings in good repair, such as our roof. We need to do roofing work, and our parking lots. This has been a bad winter on our parking lots. So just to give you a local shot of what this will do for us. The working group's recommendation is to guarantee that schools will raise $230 a pupil unit based on the working group's new pupil unit weighting formula. Maslow believes this bill will be a positive step in the right direction in reducing the statewide funding inequities between districts. The Maslow organization wholeheartedly endorses the passage of this bill, and I would like to thank you for your time, and I'm willing to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. And I think before we go there, there is a printout here. And so if you could take that out, I'm going to have Mr. Strom kind of go over that so you can kind of look and even see where your district would be. And then we have some questions. So, but thank you, Mr. Ottman. And Mr. Strom, could you talk a little bit about the printout here?
Mr. Chair, members, there's a printout in your packet that shows revenue for the fiscal year 2014. Both health and safety and deferred maintenance revenue for school districts under current law, and then compares that to the amount of money that would be generated under House File 1111. Let me briefly walk through that printout for you. In the first column of numbers is the fiscal year 14 pupil count. This is the adjusted marginal cost pupil count that's in current law, slightly different than the count that the governor's working group recommended. You can see there's 961,000 pupil units statewide. The next column is the average age, the weighted age of each school district's buildings by square footage, essentially. And you can see the average age is about 39 years. And you can look up and down that list and see how the age of your district's facilities compare. The next column is a composite column. It's the average over 5 years of health and safety revenue. As the testifier pointed out, health and safety revenue is project-based, and this means that each year, each district's health and safety revenue is different, as there are different projects that qualify. As a result, to get sort of a steady state number, a five-year average was taken here, and you can see for the last 5 years, on average, health and safety revenue has been about $56 million. The next category is the current law deferred maintenance revenue, and this is up to $60 per pupil, but it's weighted by the age index. If your buildings are 35 years of age or older, you get the full $60 per pupil of deferred maintenance revenue. If your building age is less than that, you'll get a number less than $60 per pupil. And you can see that for those districts that do not qualify, for those all but the 25 large districts that qualify for the alternative facilities program, their deferred maintenance of up to $60 per pupil totals about $26 million. So the next column simply sums those two to show the current revenue amount for those two columns of revenue. Then after the double line is the revenue proposed under this file. The facilities maintenance revenue would go to $230 per pupil. There's no longer a building weighting index in here. So as you look down that revenue amount, you'll see that most districts are at $230. Those with alternative facilities are likely to be below that amount. And then there are school districts that have been grandfathered in at a higher level that are slightly above that level. And those that have are members of intermediates get an extra $75 per pupil under this. So that grandfathers in the next column over for those that were higher than the 230, and you can see that the total proposed revenue then under this bill would be $155 million compared to the $82 million in current law. The last two columns then, Mr. Chair, show the change in revenue compared to current law for this proposal.
Before we go on, just any questions just to the printout? Before we go on, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strom, just a quick question on the age index. Mm-hmm. Is that taken into account all buildings, including administration buildings, or is this just for classrooms?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, it is generally speaking all buildings. There are some things that are excluded, like sheds and that kind of thing, but it would include things like gymnasiums and administrative space and that kind of thing. I don't believe it includes bus garages, but it would also not include other kinds of outbuildings, but it's generally the entire square footage of the district.
Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Strom, does it also include parking lots for these school districts? You know, for example, our school district charges $150 for the kids who drive per year, so they're getting money already for maintenance, I would presume, but does this include parking lots?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, yes, the deferred maintenance revenue could be used for parking lot upkeep. The age index would not reflect the age of parking lot, nor does the square footage of the district reflect the parking lot square footage. But in terms of the uses of the deferred maintenance and now the proposed facilities revenue money, that can be used for parking lot changes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on that. Is this money, it has to be used for public health and safety? It can't be moved into the general fund and used for other purposes if they don't use it for health and safety?
Yes, Mr. Chair, as Representative Newton pointed out, on the health and safety revenue, that's project-driven revenue, and it has to be used exactly for the project for which it's determined. So, for example, if a school district has fire marshal orders and they estimate that it will cost $60,000 and they actually do $55,000, they have to report the other $5,000 as an adjustment and in the next year lower their levy by that amount. So there's a tremendous amount of record-keeping involved in the health and safety program because each project essentially has to be tracked separately.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Just another quick question. You know, I want to give local school boards as much flexibility as possible, but just having been on the school board, I know the tremendous amount of pressure to add programs and then use money from other buckets for salaries and benefits or settlement, and then you don't have enough money to do the things that you need to do. So, I hope they can't borrow out of this either, or move the money. It has to be used for that particular. And I think in a school district case, we have so much pressure from parents, children, and staff on other needs. We do need to isolate some of this money and let it be used specifically for what it's designated for, because otherwise it could just drain away to another purpose. So,
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Just a quick question. I forgot. I had a follow-up for Mr. Strom. Under Representative Newton's proposal, is it possible that school districts could develop a slush fund for their maintenance facilities?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, they would not be required to spend all of the money each year so that they could develop a fund balance, but essentially that money would have to be used either for the health and safety projects or for the deferred maintenance project. So it couldn't be transferred or used for a different purpose than those two, but there's no requirement that they spend all of the money each year.
So, and as Mr. Strom, a fund balance, I think, does have statutory definition. Slush fund does not have a statutory definition.
So,
Representative McDonald.
So thank you. Yes, statutorily we're very pleased with that. Under the guidance of good men like yourself. Well, then, if a school district doesn't, if they come under budget on their project then, and under Newton's, Representative Newton's bill, yeah, they'll continue to get that money in perpetuity. So, if their project comes under budget and they still get that funds and it goes into that account for maintenance facilities and they haven't spent it all, then it is possible to continue to develop that fund.
Mr. Chair, I think the witness and the author might want to address this as well, but yes, the whole idea is that the district would be able to essentially not do it on a project-specific basis, but if they had some projects forthcoming, they could save money from this year to do all the parking lots in 2 years or something like that, that they wouldn't have to do it as the flow of money comes in, but perhaps the witness or the author would address this as well.
And I think we'll come back to that. I mean, I kind of stick to this right now, and they'll come back to answer that. So I've got Representative Quam on the printout.
Just a clarification, since it wasn't defined, Mr. Chair, is that part of the amendment to House File 867 on the definition of general education revenue? Oh. That we'll be hearing later today. We'll have an amendment to define slush fund.
No comment. Representative Vertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add the comment with regard to kind of a pay-as-you-go system, and I think that the 35 years of age of structure is too old, too long. I think we ought to be taking care of capital improvements that we make on a regular basis as circumstance may require. And, I would very much be in favor of having that time to 20 years because coming from the building trades, things happen and they need to be dealt with. And rather than letting things go into decline and not creating the fund to deal with things. I think we should be having it set up so that school districts can responsibly take care of their assets, because these big bludgeoning repair bills that come when structures are old are really expensive, and the lack of maintenance or accumulated deferred maintenance ultimately just through time and inflation makes the cost of the project much more expensive.
Very good. Representative Wells, to the printout.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate this proposal, and I think, as some of the members alluded to, it's important to give flexibility to the school districts to focus on repairing their buildings and making the improvements they need to make so that the costs don't continue to go up and if you put it off for too long. But I did have a question as I'm looking at the spreadsheet, and it's kind of an overall question. Mr. Strom mentioned that under the age of 30 for the age index, there's a lower amount that goes to the school district. And I'm just wondering if over time, if this bill was passed into law, as buildings age past the 30-year mark, is the amount of revenue that's going to be going to this going to increase?
Okay, I'm going to go to the test buyers, then I'm going to come back then to our regular list on the... Okay, very good. So, Mr. Ottman?
Mr. Chair, if I understand the question correctly, the answer would be yes. If it would go up as the buildings age, we would receive more revenue. But the way this is proposed, the $230 is the cap, so we would not be able to raise any more than that. The difference would be in the amount of pupil units the district has, whether or not we would see an increase or decrease in total revenue for that particular year.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify, Representative Newton, when you started the testimony here, or the description of your bill, you mentioned that it would kind of gut what we did with Representative Hertaus's bill. But I just want to clarify, because Representative Hertaus's bill, as it was amended, was really just the Safe Schools levy and not the Health and Safety levy.
Yes,
right? Okay. I just wanted to make
Representative
sure.
Representative Newton, right. Okay.
And then just one quick
Representative
question.
Representative Woodard.
Spreadsheet question, I'm afraid, yep. Mr. Chair. But I'm looking, Mr. Strom, at district number 2580. I have no idea whose district that is. I'm sorry, 2536, Granada. And it shows a proposed revenue per pupil of 310. And I thought there was a cap of 230. Is that, am I reading that correctly, or are we changing the cap as well?
Mr. Strom.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. If you read across here, you'll see that in the fourth to last column, that their average amount of health and safety revenue is such that they're above the $230 per pupil. And so it's this grandfather that pulls the Granada district, which is 2536, up to $310 per pupil. So if you look in the fifth to last column there, the grandfathered revenue column is where they're getting that extra $19,000 that brings them up to $310 per pupil. So part of the formula essentially was, if the new $230 per pupil is less than your current amount of deferred maintenance plus health and safety, that you get at least the amount you're currently getting.
Thank you, Mr. Sharman. I promise to listen more carefully next time. That was you had already explained that. Thank you.
Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two thoughts. One, I'd like to maybe hear from the department, if that's possible. But I do understand the benefit of the reduction of paperwork and the increased funding that goes with this proposal. And yet I'm wondering if there are certain projects that will end up going begging and that the health and safety revenue was intended to address. And because of deferred maintenance needs being what they are, that those health and safety needs will go unaddressed.
Mr. McHenry, good morning.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. To Representative Breinert, to clarify, were you saying that if there was not the if the submissions were not made to MDE for the projects, would they go undone?
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chair, I'm actually asking broadly what the department's position is on the bill first, and then I'm raising to anyone at the table the issue of health and safety levy as it was originally proposed was intended for a certain range of projects and being folded into deferred maintenance. Given deferred maintenance needs, are we going to lose, or essentially those projects will go unaddressed?
Mr. McHenry.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Reinert. The department, we're in support of the governor's bill, and obviously this isn't a piece of the governor's bill. But however, as we've said, we're if there are great ideas and there are ways to improve the bill, we're always looking forward to doing that. You know, this was a proposal that was discussed and part of the, or it's very similar to the work group recommendations from the task force and received quite a bit of support, and obviously it was part of the recommendations, and obviously it's difficult to come up with to completely come up with all the funds. This was so moving forward, obviously we're looking forward to continue working on this. As far as the projects, if they will or will not be done, I mean, I can defer to the testifier here, but I think the idea was is that that would be left in the hands of the local districts to decide what would be best to be done within their districts for their buildings.
Mr. Ottman.
Mr. Chair, this bill isn't going to change the requirements that we're going to have to continue to do to maintain our buildings in the health and safety area. We're still going to have to deal with the fire marshal orders that come down. We'll have to deal with the asbestos issues, the mold, all of those issues that we currently get funding for health and safety. I don't see this as changing those parameters at all. We're still going to have to do those projects. Like in my average, I average about $33,000 a year, and that's just for those projects. Those are ongoing costs, and so our revenues will be used for that.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do notice the reason there's no fiscal note is because of lines 114, 226, 326, 429, and 5.1. So I'm assuming that the $73 million would be the impact on the biennium. Is that per year after? So it would be a $146 million biennial impact on the budget after this one. And I see a head nod, which... Oh, yeah.
Mr. Strom, on total revenue, that is, yeah. There's most of it actually is levy, and then some of it, but maybe Mr. Strom wants to...
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, two quick things on this. The bill is drafted to be first effective for fiscal year 15. We're using fiscal year 14 data on the printout because we don't have a good handle on the projects that are going to happen next year yet for health and safety. So for the biennium, the impact, the printout is showing the first year impact, essentially fiscal year 15 would be the first year, and then the in the next biennium it would be that amount per year, and the number on the printout is just the revenue. That's an aid levy split, the chair was just asking about those numbers, so he's got those in front of him there.
Just thank you, Mr. Strom. Just here's the total revenue for deferred maintenance currently is $25.8 million, with about $22 million of it levy and about $3.5 million aid. And then the health and safety is $56 million, with almost all of it being levy. So let's calculate almost all of it being levy. What would be the total revenue between deferred maintenance and health and safety right now is $82 million, with probably $78 million of it being levy. And it would go now to combined revenue of $155 million, and that $78 million of levy would go to about $123 million of levy, and about the maybe $4 million of aid would go to $32 million of aid per year. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then my interpretation is that there would be a $45 million increase in the capability of school districts to levy without voter approval? And again, I see a head nod, so I...
Well, Representative, Mr. Strom, just so we have that on the record.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Chair, one final thing. On the definition of deferred maintenance, what is to prevent normal... When I was on the school board and I was a treasurer, we had normal annual maintenance, and we had the long-term deferred. And what is preventing a district from taking all of its maintenance budget, putting it into deferred, because you could defer any of your maintenance from one year to the next, and then, you know, in de facto opening up in your general fund of the district that money to use for other activities?
I think that Representative Newton or Mr. Ottman want to address that, please.
I believe the answer would be nothing. However, right now, it's a lot of what's happening is just the opposite. We don't have enough money for deferred revenue, I mean, for deferred maintenance issues, and we're taking general fund dollars or capital outlay dollars to fund current maintenance needs that must be done. And so this would allow districts to build a reserve, yes, which isn't a bad thing. We would be able then to act more prudently in timing of projects. And so I think that would be a good thing.
Mr. Chair, because of that one clarification, if a district in part of its bond that does go out to the voters for a new facility or an addition includes, and we did this in my district, included the cost of putting on new roofs to the old, in effect, you've got a voter-approved bond to cover deferred. Is there any safeguard to prevent there also being a non-voter approved for that same deferred?
Mr. Representative Chair, Newton. Representative Plum, I think the safeguard is just having to go before the public and present what you're doing. I don't know of any real safeguard other than having, you know, public testimony as to what the intentions of the district are.
Thank you. Representative Myra.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really like this reform, aside from the fact that it's going to be property tax increases without voter approval. How do you justify that in Piers, Minnesota, where I used to represent?
Representative Newton.
Buildings have to be maintained and preserved and taken care of. And I think that, you know, so many districts are taking money now out of the general fund to take care of these needs that I would think that the school board should be able to let the people in Piers know how they're going to do this.
So, Mr. Chair, to Mr. Hutton, is there any way to reform, because this is good reform, I really like this, but without this increase in property taxes, is there any way to do this, to change it from deferred to maintenance? I suppose the extra revenue is required, but is there any creative way to do this without that?
Mr. Ottman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson.
I used to represent you.
Yes, I do know that. We've had some discussions. Yes. You've mainly had them with my superintendent. The only thing that I can think of off the top would be all state aid. You know, the increase in property taxes without voter approval always comes back down to the local school board. If the local community don't approve of what the school board is doing, that's their opportunity. My district is very conservative. We do things Yes, thank you. And we would watch that. If we wouldn't need the entire $230, we wouldn't levy at all. Of course, if I'm correct in this bill, any dollar amount that we would not levy would be a corresponding reduction in state aid. So we would be mindful of that as well.
Thank you very much. Representative Erickson.
Well, just a comment, on the non-voter approved, that didn't have as much understanding until this last election. And because my constituency never really asked me about that line on their property taxes until this last election. And so they're getting a little smarter about what that line on the tax statement means. So, they're going to be much more aware, I think, now of board decisions when the levies are set. And, I think that's good that people are going to be better educated. One last question, Mr. Chair, though. We'll still have the Safe Schools levy, correct?
Yes.
And then we'll have this. So just yes. So I know that we have
yes.
this. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Erickson. Is there anyone in the audience who would? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative McDonald.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just my research here indicates, and maybe this is a question for Representative or Mr. Strom, that this particular proposal could add monies to the baseline. Now I'm hearing conflicting stories, and maybe you mentioned this already, that no, it goes to the local property tax, the authority to the school board, which I agree. The building should be maintained by the property tax owners, not the state of Minnesota. Not Delano and the Wright County should, fix the buildings in Pierce and other districts. That's definitely a local authority, and I think if your bill does that, it sounds like it does, gives them more control. I think that's a good thing because it should not go to the base, in my opinion. That's monies to educate the children. Your building's your own school district's responsibility, but my research here from our house says that it has the possibility of going adding to the base per year for building facilities. Is that correct?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I'm not sure quite how we're using the term base, but this would increase both the aid and levy for school districts. So there's a levy impact and a state aid impact. It goes into a reserved account. The facilities, if you look on the last section of the bill that's being amended on page 4, starting on line 22, all of this new money would go into a reserved account, and that's got to be used just for those purposes that are authorized with that reserve. So it's additional funding, as the printout shows, it's an additional $76 million a year. Part of that's levy and part of that's state aid. But from the district's point of view, that district can't use that for unobligated general fund purposes. It's got to be for the purposes set forth in that reserve.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, and I know we're rehashing this, Mr. Strom, and I appreciate your patience and indulgence. So, yes, I do. I believe I understand that. It gives the authority to the local school districts, but it still is state money going to their deferred maintenance facility program, if you will, or category, for building maintenance. So it still is the combined state taxpayers' dollars to fund local school districts' building. It's increasing that. I understand we do add, as a state, we do add some monies to that, but this increases that.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and personally, I think, Representative Newton, I appreciate the intent of the bill, but I think that for all practical purposes, school districts' buildings, the maintenance of it should be, the bulk of it should be based upon their local taxpayers.
We're going to go to testify, or anyone from the audience, first of all, would like to testify for or against House File 1111. Okay, Mr. Ottman. Oh, I'm sorry, we do have one gentleman coming forward. Good morning, Mr. Walseth.
Mr. Chairman and members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I'll just be very brief and say that our districts that represent are very much in support of this reform. This is a key component of the task force efforts and recommendations, and providing some flexibility for districts to be able to not have to rely on, continually deferring projects, relying on general fund dollars, but having a little more local flexibility to take care of their facilities needs. Having to go to the voters for everything gets to be very difficult, and I think one thing the committee should keep in mind is that I think the voter-approved piece was for extras. We don't consider maintaining and rehabbing your facilities to be extras. That is literally bricks and mortar, bread and butter, part of operating a district. So we just want to offer our support for the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Woodard has a question.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And just as we're talking about levies, and assistant for you, Mr. Walsh, so you can.
Oh, okay. Any questions for Mr. Walsh? All right. Thank you very much. Representative Woodard.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to dismiss Mr. Walsh without your authority. I apologize for that, Mr. Chair. All this talk of levy, Mr. Chair, do you know when we'll see a levy target?
I think targets will be coming out within the next week or two, for sure.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
So it should be very soon. I would think that would be before the Easter break, before the break that we have. So, Mr. Ottman.
I just have one final comment on Mr. Chair. The part of this is equity. Okay, and obviously, some districts are able to raise taxes easier than others, and because my district would be one that would benefit from the additional state aid because of the way the formula would break out. It's because it would be a harder hardship on our district, if that makes any sense.
Smaller
districts need that assist in order to get the same projects done. Like I said earlier, whether you're in a district, a large district or a small district, the cost roughly per square foot to change or to do a roof repair is going to be the same. But a larger district, obviously, with higher property values, would be able to raise that $230 much easier than my district would.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Strom. I don't think Mr. Otten is maybe he can answer this too, but is this levy based on market value or on tax capacity?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, this is a tax capacity levy.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Newton, any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chair. I'd simply like to renew my motion to move House File 1111 as amended to, we're going to put it laid over
and be,
yes,
for possible inclusion. Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. Would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 954 before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair and members, House File 954 is an attempt to deal with a misinterpretation of state statute that the Minnesota Department of Education has taken on, a new interpretation. 20-some, 30-some years ago, however it's been, that charter schools were first founded in Minnesota, they were seen as in conflict with traditional schools. And that is a vision that I think worked for many adults for many years. It didn't work for the kids, however, because we don't have charter school kids and traditional public kids because, you know, we don't nail their feet to the floor the first day they come into kindergarten. They're allowed, sometimes even encouraged, to move back and forth and find a school that best fits for them and their family. And what is emerging nationally and in a very nascent way here in Minnesota is a cooperative endeavor. And the Minneapolis Office of New Schools is perhaps the most forward expression of that. Minneapolis Public Schools is a charter school authorizer, and it leases school buildings to charter schools, some of which they are the authorizers of. That was approved by the Minnesota Department of Education. They approved Minneapolis as an authorizer. They approved the lease contract with the charter school that Minneapolis authorized. And other schools, other charter schools, Minneapolis leases to but is not the authorizer of. But building collaboration between traditional publics and charters is part of the emerging vision that we have in state law. Former Senator Saltzman spoke to me last night As the Senate author of the authorizer law, the charter school law that passed a few years ago that upgraded our laws around charters and authorizers and moved us from sponsors to authorizers and did all sorts of things, assured me that as the Senate author, the vision was one of cooperation between charters and traditional publics and breaking down the conflict that, as I said, served adults, didn't serve kids. The challenge is that the Minnesota Department of Education has reinterpreted the statute regarding the ability to lease after they approved the lease between the charter and Minneapolis to disallow it. And House File 954 seeks to again allow school districts that authorize to lease to charters they authorize, provided that the legal protections already in law continue. The contract between the authorizer and the charter school is separate from the lease contract. And of course, any lease aid that the charter school receives from the state is approved by the Department of Education. And lastly, that the authorizer cannot make their either authorization of the charter or reauthorization contingent on the charter agreeing to lease from a building owned by the authorizer. With me today is Ms. Sarah Paul from the Office of New Schools in Minneapolis.
Ms. Paul, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, committee members. We appreciate the time to have a chance to talk with you about the work in Minneapolis and our vision for all students, college and career ready. And we've got a major achievement gap in Minneapolis.
But would you please state your name for the...
Sure, my name is Sarah Paul.
Thank you.
Director for the Office of New Schools. And we've really grounded our work in quality. So in our work, we are an authorizer of charter schools, and as Representative Dabney has said, our authorizer relationship with the school is grounded in a performance agreement, and in which both parties mutually agree to autonomy and accountability parameters to which that relationship is based on that formal contract agreement. We then have a second function of portfolio and partnership development, in which we seek high-performing schools, both district and charter, that are delivering results for kids, and we look to find ways in which we can develop deeper collaboration on behalf of students that are being served across all Minneapolis public schools. And then our third function is really a research and development function, which is how are we going to take those best practices and scale them across the system. So with me today, I have two representatives of charter schools. I have Eric Mahmoud, who is the founder of Harvest Prep, Best Academy, and the New Mastery School, and then Angela Chang, who is with Minneapolis College Prep, and I'd like for them to join us in order to answer your questions.
Representative Dabney, do they want to testify, or are they here just to answer questions?
I believe they both want to speak briefly.
Okay.
And if I'm wrong, they're not required to.
Okay. Very good. Please come forward.
Sounds a little nascent.
Welcome to the committee, and would you please introduce yourself and please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Angela Chang. I'm the principal of Minneapolis College Prep, also referred to as Minneapolis College Preparatory School. We are a new charter high school, opened up in August in North Minneapolis. We currently reside in the Lincoln Community Building, and we are authorized by the Office of New Schools. I'm a school leader. I'm a former teacher, and the thing that I can speak to that I see day to day is what's best for our students and what's best for our families. I know it's really important for our families and even for our neighbors and community members for us to be residing in the Lincoln Community Building. It had been closed for 5 years, not utilized. We were opening up this August, and frequently we would see people on the street asking, is there a school coming in? Is there a school coming in? I said, yes, we will be a high school. We will have ninth grade. Our focus is on preparing students to be college and career ready and just holding very high expectations because we believe North Minneapolis deserves a school that does that, and to add something positive to the neighborhood. And just the reactions from community members was excitement. Thank goodness a school is coming in. We're very excited to see you here. And that, to me, reaffirmed, like, we owe it to the community. That building has served as a powerful memory holder for many community members, for people who have worked there as teachers and as staff. We've met them in our journey of opening, and even during the course of this year where I used to teach in this room. We're very glad that you're here. In terms of the people in our building, our students and our families, I know it's very important as a teacher, like the psychology of the space, to have a building that feels like a school. I've been in buildings in my previous employment where it's a converted warehouse, cramped, and it. I'm not going to say that the building is responsible for results, but it does contribute to the psychology of the space. And to have our building is spacious. We appreciate the space. Our students appreciate that they can go into classrooms and feel like there's space to learn and to explore. They have a full, a very large gym, if you've ever been in the Lincoln Community Building, to help support our physical fitness program. Our families appreciate that this is an already established school, and they appreciate the work that we're doing, and we are very thankful that we're able to do the work in a space that allows us to do that, and it takes away some of the worries that we have of if you are converting a space that was formerly not a school. There's some logistical problems that do pop up when you are converting a space that was purposed for one thing, to be able to provide this kind of quality education that we feel like our families in the North Side do deserve.
Thank you, Ms. Chang.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eric Mahmoud, founder of Harvard's Preparatory School, Best Academy, and Mastery Schools. I'm very excited to be here. I've been doing this work for about 27 years now, and I have not been more excited than over the last few years, because I think that there's a mindset throughout Minneapolis and St. Paul that it's going to take cooperation to close the achievement gap. As many of you know, we have the widest achievement gap in the country, and Minneapolis and North Minneapolis, where our schools are, is probably has one of the biggest challenges in the state of Minnesota. So in order to really make a significant difference, it's going to take cooperation. And I'm excited about the bold leadership of Minneapolis Public Schools, starting with the superintendent and the board of directors. And the whole idea, the only way that we're going to make a difference is that we work together. Facilities is a big factor in this whole idea of working together. So utilizing facilities to educate more children is part of Minneapolis' strategy, is certainly part of our strategy as far as expanding our work. And so I would like to ensure that there's more opportunities to remove obstacles so that good schools, great schools, can utilize the facilities in Minneapolis.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mahmoud. So, thank you. We do have
a couple of other people I think are interested in testifying, including Mr. Orr from MinCAN.
Very good.
And let's take Mr. Sweeney from Charter School Partners.
Very good. We'll take the testifiers, and then we've got a couple questions. So. Welcome. Please begin.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Christopher Orr. I'm the Government Relations and Policy Manager for MinCAN. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and thank you to Representative Dabney for carrying this important legislation. MinCAN strongly supports House File 954. Charter District Collaborations offers both districts and charters a tool to address the challenges facing Minnesota's education system, opening doors for districts and charters to partner and leverage best practices from school programs and instructional leadership to parent engagement and facilities use will help our state prepare more students to be college and career ready. House File 954 will help further that effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Orr.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Brian Sweeney, and I'm with Charter School Partners, and we are a four-year-old charter support group, a nonprofit organization, and one of our missions is to assist the Minneapolis portfolio strategy in the launch of 20 new high-performing charter schools in Minneapolis. And we're just so impressed with the commitment of Superintendent Bernadia Johnson to implement the strategy and the boldness that's going on there. Charter schools needs to be about innovation. There's a lot of innovations taking place, but perhaps there is no greater innovation than a school that has figured out how to close the achievement gap. And the two schools you had here today, and there are several others in Minneapolis and St. Paul that are doing it. So we support this bill, and we believe it's has been outlined that there are safeguards in place with the charter law, and we are in full support of this bill. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sweeney. Welcome.
There. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kathy Saltzman. I'm with Students First. I'm state director, but I want to say that while Students First supports this bill, I also want to take that hat off and put on the hat of a former state senator who authored the 2009 Charter School Reform Bill. And in doing that and working with Representative Mariani, who is here maybe in spirit, is that we worked really hard. And one of the things that I was really challenged with, that we really worked with, was the disconnect between charter schools and district schools. And that was, in some communities, it's very confrontational. And the fact is they are all public schools, and they are serving the students. And one thing that also was frustrating was having all of these charter schools going out and looking at different places of where to start. We had a lot of discussion about, like, facilities and lease aid. And to me, it was, with lease aid, if you can reinvest those dollars in taxpayer-owned buildings, to use that lease aid to do improvements, to maintain these buildings so they are owned by the public as opposed to other kinds of, like, facilities, that was a good thing. And so I'm really impressed that, you know, Minneapolis has taken this bold step to say charter schools are in our portfolio of schools, using existing school, the school buildings, and using lease aid. And it goes to the charter schools, not to the district, but that the districts are able to then improve those buildings, maintain them for the public good. I hope that's a way that you might look at this bill as, again, charters and districts working together to serve the kids in their communities.
Thank you so much, Senator Saltzman. Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and we'd like to thank Representative Dabney for carrying this bill, and we'd ask that you'd support it as well. Ever since the charter school law was passed, there's been a goal of having charter schools and districts cooperating to share effective practices for the ultimate benefit of students. And a great example of how this is taking hold is through Ms. Paul's leadership in the Minneapolis district, in working with high-performing charters to help all kids within the Minneapolis district. Again, a lot has already been said, and this is a great bill that would really help exciting things to continue to happen and for the benefit of students.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Thank you. Any other testifiers, Representative Dabney?
I have none, but as hard as it is to believe after that overwhelming show of support, I think there are some others in the audience who might have a different opinion.
Okay, but I think right now we will take questions. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dabney. Earlier, we had heard from a couple of, groups in regards to two schools that were going to be, I don't know if surplus is the appropriate term, from an integration district. And would this bill make it easier for those facilities which were designed, built, for schools to be utilized for, charter schools? Is that part of the intent?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, I like the look on Mr. Strom's face.
Mr. Strom. Chair, Representative Quam, this is unrelated to that issue. This, and the department is going to be testifying in a few moments here, but this is very specific to a piece of the charter school law where essentially as an attempt to get at some of the related party issues when a third-party building company was closely related to the charter school to make sure that there wasn't an inappropriate relationship there, the legislature tightened the criteria, and in doing so, one of the things they did was exclude school districts as an organization that could lease to a charter school that it sponsors.
Representative Plum.
Thank you. Down in greater Minnesota, frequently when smaller districts combined, you had in small towns old school buildings. And some of those have been sitting idle for a period of time. Others, they've tried to utilize part of them. There is a charter school that started up in one of the, it was my former district, and they were having trouble locating a building. But fortunately, the old school had changed hands and allowed for it to make this without having the conflict that was in law. And I'm hoping that taking care of this will allow those type of situations, and in the metro, if there is some, surplusing, that it would facilitate, because frankly, you go to a lot of extra expense to build a school, and it's sort of nice if it actually is used as its second purposing for kids. And I guess that's why I like the intent of this bill, even if some people might have some difficulty with the details.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam. We like to define things as well. In my area, it's like this, and therefore, in your area, it must be different. And in fact, it's not that different in a lot of ways. Minneapolis, over the last decade, has closed a number of schools, several in my district. Most of those schools, they have held on to the properties and maintained them. That's not without cost. Three of the buildings, City View, which is where the Minnesota School of Science is, $2 million in carrying costs. Lincoln, where Principal Chang now leads the Minneapolis College Prep, $1,800,000 in carrying costs. In several of those schools in my district, they've now reopened. What had been a community elementary school now houses the district's program for pregnant and parenting teens. So school building held in public hands, paid for by the public, and continuing with a public purpose. Middle school reopened, different program in the building, still a traditional Minneapolis public school, but reopened. Next year, an elementary school is reopening as an elementary school. Just last evening, the board approved leasing a closed school's elementary school site in Representative Wagenius's district to Hiawatha Leadership Academy for their third school in the district. And you should have received a letter from Hiawatha showing their support for this bill as well.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Dabney. This clarification is needed because last year, or in the last session, we said collaboration is needed, and now the department has apparently found that part of the statute not to be applicable to this. So thank you for bringing this forward. Ms. Paul, how many charter schools does the District of Minneapolis authorize?
Ms. Paul.
Chair Markford, committee members, we currently operate four schools. We have a small portfolio of schools, and we have two of those schools currently in Minneapolis public school buildings, and we do have one school that we do not authorize that is currently in a Minneapolis public school building.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Van Zelt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I must say that I'm growing increasingly weary of the metropolitan area emphasis and consumption of time and energy here. And further, I find it curious and rather peculiar, the manner in which the business partnership and the Chamber of Commerce decide to engage in the process here. Their selection of issues gives me concern. My question, however, is can you make me feel a little bit better about the statewide applicability of the bill in the real world? It just doesn't feel to me like this has any impact on charters and authorizers and the collaboration and the district relationships that we all strive for. And, you know, many of us, you know, have to go home and on weekends and or wherever we can, and we need to and we engage with teachers, parents, superintendents, school board members, even kids, and invariably they of late they just ask in general, just what the heck is going on down there? Just what is going on down there that's going to affect our situation? So could you just generally respond to that?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anzelk. I do believe that this bill has statewide applicability. There are several school districts outside of the metro area that are also authorizers. Winona comes immediately to mind, but I think there are a couple of others in the metro and outside the metro. So obviously today that's the case. There may be other school districts that choose in the future to be authorizers. Also, I think it's incumbent upon this committee to recognize that the student population in Minneapolis and some of the challenges that we see in families and students in Minneapolis, we're the point of the sword. You're increasingly seeing those same dynamics across the state. Rochester, Wilmer, Warroad, significant diversity in their student population. We've got rising student poverty in the state. The achievement gap is not a Minneapolis phenomena. It's a Minnesota phenomena. Places like Harvest Prep, Best Academy, Hiawatha Leadership Academy do remarkable jobs with low-income kids. While I have been a skeptic over the years of the value, the original idea of charters as incubators of innovation, I do think we are seeing a model that is developed on how to build communities of achievement with low-income kids with high needs and provide them with opportunities. And that puts them in the, I believe the words of this chair, positions them as part of the best workforce in America. And we need all of the kids in Minnesota, wherever they live and whatever they look like, to be in a position to take their place in that workforce.
Representative Enzo.
Thank you. Your words give me comfort, but frankly, the outcomes and emphasis and priorities with regard to resources continue to trouble me. The achievement gap exists everywhere. There are some common threads in solving it, but there are also some specially unique circumstances in the rural area, the rural poor. And I ask these questions of you with all the respect in the world, but I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't raise some of these issues that do concern people in greater Minnesota.
I have one more question from members, and I'm going to go to other testifiers. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Dabney, for your bill. And in your introduction, I particularly liked hearing as the last component of it that authorizers, you know, couldn't make it contingent upon leasing. But maybe just one step further, you might want to consider an oral amendment to prohibit school districts from building structures for long-term leases. That could be an enterprise that we don't want to go down.
Very good. At this time, I'm going to ask, is there anyone who would like to testify for or against House File 954? Please come forward.
That wasn't a threat.
How do you think of this?
Please introduce yourself and please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. First, just want to say we appreciate Representative Dabney bringing forth the issue, because this issue has not just been a Minneapolis issue. Listening to Representative Anzell about what applicability there is to other situations, we did have a situation this past year in rural Minnesota, southeast Minnesota, where a district who was also the authorizer and the landlord, because of the interpretation of this of the current law, had to find a new authorizer within the last 2 weeks of its contract, or otherwise it was going to be closed. So we appreciate the fact that this issue has been brought forward, because there is a need to clarify the role here of authorizer, of a landlord and authorizer relationships. Our question is, we're not opposed to it, we're not in favor of it. Our question that we would pose is to make sure that as we are looking at this, there really is a clarification of the conflict of interest piece between the dual role of being an authorizer and landlord, because as a landlord, it is significant funding involved, and it has been brought up in other testimony and other hearings about the relationship between charter schools and whether an authorizer would close a school because they would lose the fee of being an authorizer. Well, the fee of being a landlord is in the hundreds of thousands of dollars per school. And so that is a much bigger issue in terms of conflict of interest. Again, we would just encourage that as clear as possible we can clarify that relationship.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hermanson, welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have with me Cindy Murphy, who is the director of our Charter Center as well. And I want to just lay a little foundation for this.
Would you state your name, please?
My name is Rose Hermanson, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Ed. One of my duties is to supervise the charter school area. We were going through a transition from sponsors to authorizers. This occurred 2011. There was a bill that extended the time for schools to seek new authorizers. During this period of time, the department had to approve authorizers. This bill passed in 2009. So we had a bunch of schools that were sponsored by school districts, colleges, a whole variety of people. And the 2009 bill required that in order to sponsor a school, you had to become an authorizer. And so the department then was in the position, before I was there even, of going through a process of approving authorizers. Many school districts chose then not to become approved authorizers. Much of this language was also put in place. Now, our issue is not around the quality or what's going on in Minneapolis. We applaud them. We think this is great what they're doing in a collaborative way. The collaboration is not the issue for us. The issue for us is our responsibility in looking at the use of public dollars to make sure that there's not a conflict or that in the case of this, a related party, that we are clearly delineating who can or cannot be a leasee and a leasor, and in the dual role as an authorizer and then the leaser. The question arose as we went back and looked at statute. We thought it was fairly clear that a related party, and in this case an authorizer is a related party, that everybody was prohibited except a nonprofit corporation or a cooperative under 308A. In this process of transitioning schools to new authorizers, we then became aware of the fact that there were school districts that in essence were leasing to their buildings or to the people they were authorizing. Clarifying that we're appreciative of, but we were making a decision based on the fact that the law we felt was clear enough to say we can't do that. Now, we also have some concerns long term about what this means. We have college, when the public spends money on a building, in the case of public schools, but there are other entities, we have colleges that are authorizers. If, in essence, we place schools within those facilities, do we then pay again lease aid to those facilities? How do we make that determination? You have Rushford Peterson, who is an approved authorizer, who's coming to the Capitol here asking for money to help with their buildings. I'm not making judgments about that, but in essence, if they were to close down one of their buildings and then charter it, we would then be required to pay lease aid to that building. So it gets more complicated for us. Another factor is, in the case of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and other ones, they are using alternative facilities money to help build buildings. How do we as a department separate all this stuff and make sure that we don't have some complications there that we're not anticipating? So we don't quarrel with what Minneapolis is doing in relation to doing good things for kids. We applaud them. But we have a responsibility here to separate out the money trail and make good decisions with public dollars. And that's part of the reason this decision was made. If you as a policy decide you want to go down this route, our responsibility is to make you fully aware of what kind of route you're going down. I think Representative Dabney did explain a little bit about keeping these decision-making items separate, but there are some complications that we've had with charters where somebody leased to a school and all of a sudden decided they wanted to lease to somebody else because they could get more money and the school was out looking for another place. So we end up at the department having to kind of mediate and solve those problems. So I just want you to be fully aware of the other things that may go on as you go down this path, and whatever you do, help us, give us clear direction on how we can handle these different types of situations. Thank you.
Very good.
And Cindy is here. She, you know, she helps facilitate that. I don't know if there's anything she wants to add.
Anything to add to that? We're running short of time here. So,
Mr. Chair, committee members, I don't have anything specific to add, but I'm more than happy to take any questions.
Very good. I think we've got one person. Representative Erickson, I'm going to give you the final question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Assistant Commissioner Hermanson, because I think you raised some important points. However, I would think that between the department and the charter school organizations, that we should be able to find some language that we could use to amend what Representative Dabney's doing here that would, you know, in essence, clear up these dilemmas. And we have good lawyers in the audience, and you have counsel. So, you know, let's work together and accomplish this so that there isn't conflict of interest. The school districts aren't seeing this as a moneymaker. And, you know, you raise great issues, and I think now is the time to clear this up. Thank you.
Representative Erickson, thank you for those comments, and I hope those are well heeded.
We're willing to do that. I just think we need to look at the whole landscape and try, you know, we're very concerned about, you know, having these conflicts going on. And again, we applaud what Minneapolis is doing, but we have to have some clear direction.
Thank you, Ms. Hermanson, Ms. Murphy. I agree with that. Representative Dabney, any closing comments here very quickly?
Mr. Chair, no, I appreciate the time that the committee has given. I think if we want charters and traditional schools, traditional public schools, to collaborate, we need to get some of the hurdles out of the way, the structural hurdles that are impediment to that, that may still be in state law. I think we've got a positive vision going forward. Now we just got to get it to fit into the structures of statute. So thank you for the time. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 954 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Very good. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Now I would like to ask Representative Hertaus to come forward and chair the meeting. We'll chair up a couple bills.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, Representative Marquardt, thank you for allowing me to sit in this chair. Representative McDonald was waving a ruler around, and I did confirm that he didn't go to parochial school, so I no longer had to fear for my safety. And so we've got two bills, so would you like to introduce your bill?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that House File 867 be moved to pass and re-referred to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's vote.
members, this just...
It's in the vehicle bill.
Thank you. Very good. Yes, this has to move on, members. And this removes obsolete language regarding the training and experience.
So moved.
And ask for your support.
Thank you. Question. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the author be interested in working on the language to maybe move some of these, besides that one, out of the general ad revenue formula to be able to have more visibility and transparency?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bob, I will work with any members to move these on.
Okay, with that, is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to House File 867? Hearing none, would you like to make a final comment?
I appreciate your support, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping your testifiers to a minimum.
But, Mr. Chair, I think we have to vote on this one because we're moving it to taxes.
The Chair renews his motion to move House File 867 be recommended to pass and be referred to the House Tax Committee. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next, you have another bill, House File number 1041.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 1041 be passed and re-referred to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Ms. Representative Marquardt. Tell us about your bill.
Mr. Chair, this removes some 2006 obsolete language from the Alternative Attendance Aid Adjustment. And don't ask me about that, please.
With that, is there questions from members? Seeing none, is there any public testimony regarding House File 1041? Any other further discussion?
Members, you're so kind, I'd ask for your support. Thank you.
All right. Okay, members, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. And I think the meeting's adjourned.